You're listening to a Franciscan Voice podcast, your voice for all things good.
Welcome, Father John.
Hello.
Pleased to have you here today. We have chosen for our conversation for the next little bit a confounding passage from one of the most confounding parts of the Bible, the book of Revelation. And specifically, it's not John 3:16. which everybody has seen the guy with the sign. But this is Revelation 3:16, where Jesus says, "Because you are lukewarm, neither hot nor cold, I will spit you out of my mouth."
Well, just thinking about that lukewarmness and the revulsion that Jesus had in spitting it from his mouth, that there's that distance going away from Jesus. He wants nothing to do with someone lukewarm. And so just sort of resting with that image of maybe that lukewarmness is the I don't care attitude. You know, if you're hot and passionate for a person in relationship, you often get mad. If you're cold and distant and living far away, well, there's the option to maybe come back. But that middle ground of I don't care, what do you do with that? And that's a real rejection of the person and the system, and maybe an ambivalence comes with it. Well, I could do with it or I could do without it. Come see, come saw. And Jesus is saying, affirming that hotness and coldness, that, hey, I want to see a passionate person or maybe a person in a dry place, a cold place where their prayer is ordinary and they're not getting any sort of consolation from their prayer and they're in a place of desolation. Hey, Jesus can work with that. Or a person in consolation that's receiving this fervent desire to go forward with passion. Hey, I can deal with that. But that middle ground, Jesus doesn't even want to work with that.
Well, you know, you say that and it makes me think when you're talking about the person who's cold. The cold could be maybe Jesus is talking about someone who feels sort of abandoned in their prayer or feels like God isn't there. Like Mother Teresa, we were talking about,
example.
You know, with all the good works that she was doing, with all the stuff, all the way she was leading her sisters, the story is, she's written in her diaries and letters, that she felt no presence of God in her prayer, no consolation in her prayer for, I think, many years, many decades.
10 years, in the letters,
it says. Yeah, it was a decade. Okay, so for many years, she felt nothing. And yet, it's like you were telling me, the quote from her, "The most terrible poverty is loneliness and feeling unloved." So she's almost talking about herself, huh?
Oh, yeah. I didn't think about her self-reflection in there. I know that she has made that accusation of the United States, that being the most poor country she's ever experienced. And you think about, gosh, she was in the streets of Calcutta working with the poorest of the poor. And yet her experience of that loneliness, that cut-offness of people not giving nonverbal eye contact, for example, or not greeting each other on the sidewalk, but that dismissiveness where I don't really care about this other person, because I'm about my duties and I have more important things in store. I'm not even gonna stop and greet this person. That creates this despair and loneliness that makes us one of the poorest nations ever. And she said this when she came to receive the Nobel Prize in New York City, and she was just overwhelmed by our poverty. And I often think of that just that lukewarmness, that I don't care attitude that sometimes we convey to people, even with nonverbals, with real small ways, we cut people off because it's their disturbance to us, and I gotta be about my business.
Another thing that you were saying is with this, there's an idea of being an intentional disciple, like, have, you know, doing things with a purpose, I guess. Is that what you mean by that?
Yeah, and I think that's where your passion gets awakened, that there's an idea of, you know, what is the driving force of my life, and what am I shooting for? Am I living for God or living for myself, for example? And that if we were to maybe take a different perspective of a eulogy that's said about us, and we're present at that eulogy, and we say, oh, if only I would have whatever. What is that one thing that you were passionate about, but you never followed through on it? You never did it. You never put the wheels in motion to actually awaken this passion within you. I think that's part of the lackluster of lukewarmness, is that we have these passions within us, and we know our gifts, or those gifts have been affirmed by others for us, but we don't ever have an opportunity to flush them out and to act them out. And how awful it would be at the reflection on our life to say, oh, if only I would have followed that nudge from the Lord, or that call to experiment this gift I have for music or for the arts or for reading or for writing or whatever those gifts are within you, and that they sit latent in a lukewarm pool and they never get flushed out.
It's, you know, I'm thinking of something that somebody said one time, I'm not sure it was, perhaps the reason God plants those desires in our hearts is that we will act on them.
And I think of those people that have acted out those passions, like St. Francis, like St. Clare, that they didn't sit in a passive way, but in a very passionate way. They went against the culture around them, were very countercultural in their time, in the Middle Ages, and that they went for it in a big way. You know, I think of like St. Francis being willing to walk away from his father's business as a fabric merchant, and he was a traveling salesman going to France and other places to sell those bolts of fabric, as it were, and he himself knew about the business market, and he knew about the importance of the family business, and yet he was able to put that on a side and say, hey, this is what fills me with passion, this gospel message, and this is what I want to do. And probably one of the most striking examples, at least in the life of St. Francis, was when he met the leper on the road. He was on a business trip, and he was riding a horse, and there in the middle of the road was someone with Hansen's disease, as we know it today, and leprosy, and they were giving a warning, saying, stay away, I'm unclean. And he had been ruminating on the gospel message. Gosh, Jesus says he's in the body of Christ. He's in every person. That means Jesus is going to be represented in this leper. And yet I'm revulsed by him. And here he is on his horse with his fine salesman outfit and this fine accoutrements.
So this is before he left his family.
Yeah, so this is before his conversion. And he had this inspiration, I want to meet Jesus in this leper. So he left his high horse, literally stepped down on the ground, lowered himself eye to eye with the leper, walked up to him, and the leper, imagine in my mind, being covered with rags, because leprosy, you lose parts of your fingers and your nose and ears, and it's just an awful, awful disease, and contagious that they knew in the Middle Ages. And yet he went and lowered himself on one knee and reached out and kissed the hand of this leper. And he reflects that at that moment, everything that he had once thought was bitter became sweet. And all the other things that he thought were sweet became bitter. And that now he wasn't revulsed by people that were different from him. In fact, he sought them out to see the face of Christ within them. And it awakened this passion that says, I can't give my life to this family business. Other people, that's their vocation, but that wasn't his. And he set out to live this new calling of this little poverello, this little poor man, begging for the grace of God to live out this gospel. Well, St. Clare of Assisi, being from the same hometown as St. Francis, she would have been captivated by what St. Francis was doing. And hearing the stories and witnessing them herself by being right there for
some... And she probably knew him.
Oh yeah, it definitely would. There was likely 11 to 12 years difference, her being younger. So right around his conversion happened at 24 years old. So she would have been like 12, 11 years old, give or take. And so she was seeing what was happening there. And later at 18 years old, she makes her big step to walk away from her fortune, which was even more because she came from the Majores in Assisi, being nobility. And her family was endowed with all kinds of wealth. If she wanted it, she could snap her fingers and receive it. I mean, she was really on her way, yet she didn't want any part of that. She walked away from it to the protests of her family, because with her leaving that life, she was walking away from more power and prestige and arranged marriages. But I imagine her future was all planned for her by her family, especially Uncle Manaldo. And there was a lot of conflict between her and Uncle Manaldo. And I imagine he had everything all figured out as to how she was going to garner more power and prestige for the family. And yet she walked away from that towards this simple gospel living near the friars, not with the friars. She was female, so she couldn't live with the friars. But she stayed with the Benedictines and later became the foundress of the Poor Clares. I'm really appreciative of her work because she's the patron saint of media. So before we do our podcast, I'm always praying for the intercession of St. Clare to help us out.
You know, when you talk to people, how do you challenge them to maybe get beyond this lukewarm kind of thing?
Well, I think the most important thing is just to open up that dialogue between them and God, and to see where God is opening the door, or maybe giving little nudges along the way. Because, you know, one person could be called to the driver's seat of a bus, for example, and be a wonderful, motor coach commander or a bus driver. Well, you know, another one could be called to do, you know, great work in a warehouse or a mailroom or wherever that is. And that's their calling, and they know it. But when you don't have the calling to be there, you know that as well. And it's a little nudge within you, and it becomes an expression of you're going through the motions in the work field, and you just don't feel called for it. And you know it in the heart of hearts. And so at least that's something that I experienced, I should say, in my experiences working, that I knew that many around me were called to those professions that I was in, and they're very good at it. But I knew I was not. And until I really sought it out, I felt as though I was just going through the motions and not really being honest to where God was calling me. And since I just investigated the religious life, it's been like a roller coaster ride of adventure. You know, with the ups and downs and not knowing what's around the corner and relishing in the excitement and adventure of it all. I didn't imagine that in my head. I thought it would be, oh, they're going to be praying all day long and it's going to be boring. And it's been quite the opposite, at least for me.
How do people respond when you talk about that with them? Is that resonating with them? Is that giving them a sense, not just with religious vocation, but maybe any kind of thing to really kind of answer those nudges, as you were saying, that they're feeling inside?
Well, sometimes I think all I do is I listen to connect the dots. You know, I can think of one particular a man who called in, and he was so frustrated at just the lack of ethics in the corporate life. And he was just at his wit's end, and he had acquired the position, the office, the power, all the toys that go with it, and he should be happy and delighted and content. And he reached a point where he says, I just can't tolerate it anymore. And I began laughing. And he's like, why are you laughing at me? I go, no, I'm not laughing at you. I'm laughing because God has something wonderful in store for you. I mean, God's calling you to something more. And I'm just connecting the dots for him to say, have you considered a new occupation that really reaches in your bag of passions and gifts, and not just the title and corporate benefits that he had. And it was just a great conversation, and I feel that it started with God, and I'm just watching for that, you know, providential hand to enter someone's life at just the right time, at just the right juncture, where they're like, oh my goodness, what am I doing? Why am I here? This isn't me. And then I'm just there to connect the dots. Mm-hmm. I often say God does the calling, I just do the administration work in the background.
When someone makes a choice, when they are married and in a job they know, you know, they're using their talents and they're a good mom or dad, or it's a priest or a religious brother or a religious sister, and they've made that commitment, and all of a sudden they hit a skid. They hit a spot where they're back to this lukewarm kind of stage where mm-hmm. they're going through that dry spell, or going through that, you know, I know I made the right decision, but right now I could choke everybody in sight kind of thing. what do you say to somebody who's in a quandary like that? Because that's almost like this constant recommitting that one has to do, whether in marriage or in religious life. What do you say to somebody?
Well, at least for me, I think a spiritual direction is good, because when you have a spiritual director, just to bounce off those experiences of maybe a dryness, of just those experiences when you can't find consolation and you have more desolation than consolation, those are great places to bring to spiritual direction, because you have a spiritual director who knows your story, and they can really help connect the dots better than someone like me just coming in maybe once or twice and speaking to them. But I think that there's the wealth of just having that other person as their trusted ears, and the person that's in their corner that can help them out. And then on a personal basis, I think redirecting your passions to say, well, why am I here? Taking that maybe end-of-life perspectives, that am I going to be stuck with what ifs? What if I would have really committed myself to this and not just gone through the motions? Would I regret some of those perspectives? And I think that's just a wonderful reflection and meditation at your own eulogy. Well, what are people going to say? And what am I going to regret being present and listening to other people eulogize my life? Every person is called to a vocation, and it's planted there by God. And part of our job is to discern, or to ask, what is it, God, you're calling me to be? And for each person, that'll be different. Some they'll be called to single life, some called to married life, some called to religious life, some called to ordained life. And it's a wonderful adventure, and it's a thrill ride for sure. And hopefully you got your seatbelt on, because it'll give you a definite adrenaline-filled ride, no matter where your passions play out.
To find other episodes and more content from Franciscan Voice, follow us at our website at franciscanvoice.org.